Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Eccentric and Extinct. My name is Kat, and I am your lovely host for this podcast. I am back from my unplanned little break slash running around with my head chopped off, and for the most part, things are back to normal, and I can get back into the swing of things. Luckily, the break really refueled my love for this podcast, and I hope you guys enjoy going along for the journey. I keep learning new things each day, and it's been really fun to get to make the changes and meet some really cool people along the way. Now enough with the mini-explanation slash update segment. Let's get into this week's topic and meet our darling Mad Doctor, who is the highlight for this episode. Let's take a step back in time. It's 1886, and the United States is going through a lot of changes. The world's first transcontinental railroad was being built, which would join the east and the west half of the United States. The railroad would change the possibilities in both business and in life. Besides the railroad, the United States was also facing a lot of riots and strikes, with the most well-known being the Haymarket Affair in Chicago that would change workdays to be 8 hours. This whole riot and bombing could be its own podcast episode, which I might do in the future due to the crazy reports and speculations that happened in the aftermath of this event. But let's move on to what is happening in a small town in Arkansas. On July 4th, 1879, a small group of people decided to build a town around the Healing Springs in Arkansas, a name given by the Sioux Indians who had discovered and used the springs originally, would later be stumbled upon by the first white settler, Dr. Alva Jackson, in 1856. Jackson would keep the springs a secret and would continually go back and restock bottles of water that he would sell. Through his experimentation on the spring water, he had found that the water had cured his son's eyes and decided to sell the water as Dr. Jackson's eye water. Gotta make that money, right? Jackson started to think about how he could expand on this knowledge and wealth. He decided to take his friend, Judge Saunders, up to the spring to see if the springs could somehow help cure the judge's leg problem. Over time, the judge would be cured of his crippling leg problem and would push for Jackson to build a settlement near the springs. The settlement went up relatively fast, with the wealthy living closer to the springs and the poor living up on the hills overlooking the springs. The town would continuously be built up and more companies would invest in the development of the town. In 1882, the Eureka Springs Improvement Company was founded, and the group pushed to be a part of the railroad system, and even was pushing civil engineering efforts. The town would continue to prosper until 1883, when a huge fire broke out and blazed through the town. The destruction was massive, and in order to gain more money and keep the town thriving, the ESIC, or Eureka Springs Improvement Company, and Frisco Railroad funded to build the Crescent Hotel and made the hotel out of natural limestone to prevent further fires. Drum roll, please, because we have finally got to today's star of the show, the Crescent Hotel and Spa. This expansive hotel was built on the West Mountain above the town in 1886. Designed by Isaac L. Taylor, a well-known Missouri architect, the Crescent Hotel was built as a 78-room resort built on 27 acres of land, and it overlooks the valley below. Stonemasons from Ireland were brought in to construct the hotel, and besides the hotel being built out of heavy limestone, the masons also built 18-inch walls, a number of towers, overhanging balconies, and a massive stone fireplace to gather around in the lobby. At the time of its build, it was one of the most luxurious resorts that you could experience in the United States, which was great for the large amount of people that were coming in to cure their ailments and experience the natural springs. It had electrical lights, modern plumbing, steam heating, an elevator, extensive landscaping, and plenty of luxurious decorations and amenities to appeal as a destination you must go to. The hotel rooms were large and draped with exquisite furnishings. The hotel also boasted a dining room that seated more than 500 people, a swimming pool, tennis courts, croquet, winding boardwalks, flower gardens, and gazebos aplenty for their upper-class guests. And if the Healing Springs weren't enough for you, there was 100 sleek-coated horses, tea dances to be had in the afternoon, and plenty of fancy dinner parties to experience while a full in-house orchestra would have you dancing the night away. But like most nice things, they come to an end. The turn of the century was happening, and modern medicine was taking big strides. People began to realize that the spring wasn't as magical as advertised. Between the ups and downs of the economy during this time, and then heading into the Great Depression, Eureka Springs, as a whole, wasn't really doing so great. The hotel would close its doors and only be open again in 1908 to 1924 as a Crescent College and Conservatory for young women, while still acting as a resort during the summer months. But again, the hotel slash college would close after 16 years, since it could not maintain the cost of running the building on the small revenue from tuition and summer guests. It would sit abandoned for a while, seeing a brief bit of love when opened for 4 years as a junior college. Now step in the man of the hour, our very villainous gentleman character, Norman Baker. Baker was born to a wealthy family in Muscatine, Iowa. He was the 10th child in the family and lived rather well for the times. His father, John Baker, was a famous inventor who patented 126 inventions, and his mother, Frances Mary, was a writer by trade. He started out as a vaudeville performer and was also an inventor, having invented the automatic caliphone, a variation of the then common steam organ. This mobile steam organ would be used by fairgrounds and circuses everywhere. But Baker would eventually become fascinated with the vaudeville mentalist performers. These performances would include hypnosis, telepathy, clairvoyance, divination, prognition, mind control, and much more. This might have been a small key as to his interests in the future, but nonetheless, Baker moves on from his performances in 1924. He moves on to radio broadcasting and convinced the Muscatine town and KTNT, promoting the show to the local town and the Midwest area, but stepping on independent stations in the progress. He would go on to even use his power and control over the radio to rally against innumerable commercial, media, and political groups both locally and nationwide. Sounds like a class act, right? But the man was really only looking out for his interests at heart. He even controlled a magazine called TNT that would write undercut articles about other newspapers and would denounce water fluoridation, vaccinations, and aluminum cookware, which he claimed caused half of all cancer cases in the United States. Baker became recognizable by society as a figure willing to fight for his beliefs and to lobby until his voice would be heard. This did not bode well for those that would fall victim to his charms and confidence in the near future. Norman decided to venture into something a bit different this time. He had learned of an alleged cancer cure by Charles Ozias in Kansas City. Though all five of the test subjects had died in the process, Norman still believed that the treatments were correct and decided to bring Harry Hoxie, a convicted medical swindler, to Muscatine, Iowa. They both banded together and created a cure. This cure, later to be labeled as the Hoxie therapy, was a mixture of herbs that was a recipe from Hoxie's great-grandfather. His great-grandfather had put the mixture on a horse that had a tumor on its leg. Hoxie claimed that the leg cured over time, as the horse grazed on wild plants in the meadow. With this recipe and take, both Hoxie and Baker would open the Baker Institute in Muscatine in April 1930. Baker would even go on air to promote the cure to all those who would listen. Of course, this treatment didn't come cheap. After all, there was nothing like it, and modern medicine couldn't compete, supposedly. Baker would basically inject the patient with a mix of common substances including corn silk, watermelon seeds, clover, water, and carbolic acid, though he would of course promote it as a rare ingredient that many people didn't know of. Of course, people, especially licensed doctors, and the Journal of American Medical Association reported that Baker was a quack and a liar. But business went on until the state of Iowa filed for an injunction against Baker and Hoxie for practicing medicine without a license. I mean, Baker had even conducted his own Woodstock-like gathering in which he cured all the patients that had gathered, and these events would attract tens of thousands of people. Eventually, Baker and Hoxie would fight and file lawsuits against each other. It seems that Norman had been spiriting away the money in during the night, and insisting that the Institute was making $100,000 a month, Hoxie was pretty livid. Baker would be exiled to Mexico and wouldn't return until 1937, only to serve one day in jail and pay a $50 contempt of court fine. In between his little exile and return, Baker spent his time making another radio station that would promote his alleged cancer cure, and at night, The station would broadcast hillbilly-style music between Baker's racist rants, or he would just broadcast him having sex with his mistresses. Yep, you heard me right. But after all of that, and his random runs for governor of Iowa in 1932 and senator in 1936, which, yeah, he lost big time, Neumann was back again and ready to try his hand at another business plan. He stepped foot in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and saw how down on its luck the town was. The Crescent Hotel had went from elegant to extinct over the many years it had been closed down. Baker decided to buy the aging hotel and open it back up as a cancer hospital and health resort. Yep, this man never learns, does he? Neumann would go on to advertise a miracle cure that required neither surgery nor painful extensive tests. And of course, people that had been pushed to their limits and desperately wanting relief decided to come to the Baker Hospital for the cure. After all, patients allegedly would walk away from the resorts cancer-free. Between his injections and elixirs he sold to cure a variety of ailments, Neumann treated thousands of desperate patients. Through all of this, Baker accumulated hundreds of thousands of dollars and kept the money in safe deposits known only to him and his new accomplice, Thelma Yount. It was speculated that the hospital cleared about $500,000 in a year. Baker would continue to remodel the hotel, leaving it covered in lavender-colored furnishings, which went so well with his own fashion of white suits, purple shirts, and lavender ties, as well as an orchid-colored car. He also created an escape route on the first floor office suite through a hidden staircase, always one for a dramatic exit, I guess. The desk in the office was a custom six-sided desk that housed the work for his six businesses as well as a gun. But luckily, Baker would once again be brought to court for mail fraud, as that was the only way the state could bring him to court at the time. He would be convicted to serve 4 years in Leavenworth. Through the investigation, Baker was charged with defrauding cancer patients out of approximately $4 million. His patients did not die from Baker's cure, though there is reports that some did. But it was found that the treatments most likely hastened the death of those suffering from cancer, since they didn't receive effective treatments in time. Neumann would go on to serve his time and even try to re-establish another hospital in Muscatine, Iowa. But luckily the state would not permit the establishment, and Baker would move to Miami, Florida, to live in lap and luxury until his death in 1958. The Crescent Hotel, now free from its horrible villain, would stay empty during the war until 1946. It would be bought by four businessmen from Chicago and restored to its former elegance. Unfortunately, tragedy would strike, and in 1967, the fourth floor of the South Wing would be destroyed by a blazing fire. Over the next few years, the hotel would be passed through different people and restored piece by piece, but never to its full grandeur. That is until 1977, when the historic hotel was purchased by Marty and Elise Roenick. The couple spent the next 5 years building and repairing the hotel to its former glory. They rebuilt the spas, the beautiful skyline, new penthouse, original center observation tower, the 200-pound, 24-foot-tall crescent moon weather vane, and a few other grand pieces. The guest rooms, lounges, electrical, plumbing, and landscape were updated and restored to the original design. And on September 6, 2002, the hotel was finally back to its glory days. So with this history, and a variety of dastardly characters that crept through the halls, the hotel's bound to have a few spooks lurking around the corner, right? Well, maybe, as this hotel is claimed to be America's most haunted hotel. Our first known apparition is a red-haired Irish stonemason dubbed as Michael. Michael is reported to be one of the original stonemasons that worked on the Crescent Hotel. Sadly, while working on the roof, he lost his balance and fell to his death in the second floor area. Today, this area is room 218 and is said to be the most haunted guest room. Michael enjoys playing tricks on guests with turning lights on and off, slamming doors, turning on the TV, and pounding loudly on the walls. Other guests have claimed seeing hands coming out of the bathroom mirror and hearing cries that sound like a man falling into the ceiling. Some guests have even been shaken during the night, and even one guest has ran screaming from the room, claiming to have seen blood splatter all over the walls of room 218. Sounds like a perfect room to just relax and rest, right? But of course, we have to have some transparent guests hanging around from the days of the Baker Hospital. Well, we are in luck, as the hospital is haunted by a lingering nurse dressed all in white. She is seen most of the time pushing a gurney on the third floor. Guests have pinpointed that you can only spot her after 11 p.m., as this was the reported time that the Baker Hospital would move the deceased out of the cancer hospital. The lingering nurse will vanish as she reaches the end of the hallway. People have reported the sounds of squeaks and rattles that sound like a gurney rolling down the hall, and have called the front desk asking what the noise was. This area houses the morgue, and even today has Dr. Baker's old autopsy table and walk-in freezer. But let's not forget the man of the hour. Dr. Baker himself likes to roam the old recreation room in the basement, or creep about in the first floor stairway. Dressed in his best, with a purple shirt and a white linen suit, people have reported a confused gentleman to the staff. But when they go back, he isn't to be found. But the guests report that the figure is identical to old photographs of Dr. Baker. A few other quirks happen as well, like the washers and dryers turning on in the middle of the night, and the old antique switchboard continually receiving phone calls from the empty basement, where hapless patients used to sign away their life savings for treatments. There's also other ghosts, like Theodora, who lurk about in room 419, and will courteously introduce herself as a cancer patient to the housekeepers before vanishing. Of course, you can also venture into the Crystal Dining Room, which used to house luxurious balls and dining parties during the hotel's heyday. Here you can find Victorian-dressed apparitions from the 1890s dancing away, or a 19th-century gentleman who was seen sitting at a table near the windows. People have reported approaching the figure and stating that the figure talked to them and said he saw the most beautiful woman here last night and he was waiting for her return. That is so cute. I love cute, cuddly ghosts. Warms the heart, even though it's kind of a bit sad that he's still waiting. Most of the Victorian spirits in the dining room are reported to be playful, with moving the Christmas presents during the holiday season, or moving chairs and menus about at night. Some other not as well-known ghosts is the small boy that moves pots and pans in the kitchen, a young female scream heard from the upper balcony, a ghostly waiter carrying a tray of butter into the hallway, and other apparitions in room 202 and room 424. The Crescent Hotel and Resort Spa, today, is fully restored to its former glory, as well as a few modern elements here and there. It is visited by thousands of people each month, and still offers a luxurious experience and large, expansive gardens. It has a long history and has gone through many twists and turns, but it seems some people can't let it go quite yet. Will you spend the night? We are done with this week's topic. I threw a ton of history at you, so I hope you guys enjoy the in-depth on both our villain of the day, as well as the history of the hotel. I had known a bit about Baker Pryor before, but did not know much about the Crescent Hotel itself. My mom had recently spent the night there with my dad and had taken the tour, so she was the one that brought it to me and thought it would be a perfect fit for this week's episode. And even recently, the hotel has been working on expanding the parking pad at the north end of the hotel. As they were digging around, they found buried medical-looking bottles. They realized that it matched Baker's advertising posters for his elixirs. They even found a cancerous tumor in a bottle, which was probably one of his "look what I can do for you" kind of advertising spiel prop. On April 9th of this year, the Arkansas Archaeology Survey began to excavate the area, and they found more bottles, medical specimen jars, and an old bone saw. So the hotel keeps adding to its history, as well as expanding its haunted tour. Might try to take a visit sometime next year, get a little bit of hot spring action myself. If you want to read up more on today's episode or on the hotel, you can find all my source notes at eccentricextinct.com, as well as source notes for any of my previous episodes. This week's media of the week, as already posted on my Instagram and Twitter, is Electric Candygram Podcast. If you're looking for a podcast that will make you feel like you're hanging out with some of your best friends and watching them go back and forth with quirks and humorous jabs, then you should check them out. Oh, and yeah, they have one of the best segments where they get calls from their guests that choose what topics they're going to talk about in that episode, and then they just improv, which is honestly phenomenal. Talk about some great improvisation skills. And then, just to add a little extra, they rate the candy from your childhood. It's a sweet deal of a podcast, so check them out on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Do you like what you hear, or have constructive criticism for the Eccentric and Extinct podcast? Then please leave a rating wherever you're listening to the podcast. This helps me know that you guys are digging the topics, and helps me change/improve the podcast so that I'm providing you guys with a great listening experience. Thank you in advance. On another note, if you'd like to see visuals, clues, bad puns, other podcast recommendations, and just me being an eccentric, follow along on my Facebook and Instagram at eccentric.extinct, and on Twitter at eccentricxtinct. Finally, email me at eccentricextinct@gmail.com if you have any topics you'd like me to cover, or if there's a podcast you think I should check out for my media of the week, or if you want to chit-chat about something fun. I'm always up to meet new people. Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode. Glad to be back into the swing of things. Hope you guys have a great rest of the week, and don't drink any magical elixirs. Ibid Vale.